So our lesson is laboring to gain eternal rest. Running, laboring, striving while we do rest. And you know, brethren, essentially these both are a state of mind and less physical. Oh, no doubt there is physical toil and distress, just as there is need for undisturbed sleep. Yet faith and courage have moved some to Herculean tasks beyond human strength. It was so with David, who fought a lion, a bear, and Goliath. And then divine peace also brought composure and rest for Daniel in the den of lions, and also for the three Hebrews in the fire. So where does this state of heart and mind lead us? While we acknowledge a rest of faith that belongs to the present life, and this has been well explained, Paul also speaks of a future rest for which we now labor. And so for a moment, we'll consider Hebrews 4, 8 through 11. If Jesus had given them rest, then would he not afterward have spoken of another day? For he that has entered into his rest, he also hath ceased from his own works, as God did from his. Let us labor, therefore, to enter into that rest, lest any man fall after the same example of unbelief. So even now, we labor to enter into that greater rest. Yet the rest also begins now. We find this little comment on reprint 5909. Brother Russell says, "We who have believed do enter into rest," says the Apostle Paul. And this rest which we enter seems to have been typified by this promised land of Canaan. You know, when leaving Egypt, the Hebrews might have promptly entered into that promised land, except for the report of 10 spies. And with fear of unbelief of the people, they might have entered in the land by faith just then. But their labor was extended for another 40 years. Then again, they had to muster their courage and vigilance to enter the land of rest. It was still a land of milk and honey. Yet there were more enemies to conquer. The fall and routing of Jericho might have bolstered their faith and courage to finish the work. But weariness and fear took its toll on faith in due time. The land was not purged of idolatry and enemies. Accommodation of opposers seemed to offer a little respite without the work to occupy all the promised land. Israel was never free from the thorns of doubt, fear, and skeptics while settling the land. And the toil with unbelief continues even into this day with some. The courage and labor to enter through open doors seem so easy and natural to do. Yet reluctance and procrastination only bring us greater afflictions. This can be noted in at least two other occasions with natural Israel also. So we want to look at these. First, Israel failed to even properly use the Sabbath and Jubilee rests, because desiring to reap some temporal bounties, For this they endured 70 years of desolation and removed to Babylon. Then the door returned to the land was opened by King Cyrus. But you know, only about 50,000 returned, according to Ezra 2, 64 and 65. What about all the estimated 1.5 million, and maybe more, from the pre-exile tribes of Israel and Judah? All were offered the opportunity, but most thought these homes and gardens in Babylon were sufficient. Maybe they should just wait and sponsor another generation the chance to return after other laborers rebuild the cities and temple. But the chance never came. Those that remained suffered dispersion to all the countries of the world. They would wait nearly 2,500 years to return to the promised land. Our second point is that you know about the laborers of Zion who did return from exile in 1878 and onward to build and to plant. They labored under the harshest conditions to drain swamps, gather out stones to plant and water new fields. Even after the Holocaust, 7 million Jews were caught behind an iron curtain of socialist Russia. Then arose another would-be Cyrus in Russia. In 1991, Gorbachev said that anti-Semitism had infected Russia for too long. Jews were free to emigrate, that is to leave, if they chose. Of course, this meant they should leave all their lands and houses and assets to the Russian state. Well, more than 500,000 jumped at the opportunity to go to Israel and start a new life. Some 200,000 others emigrated to the United States and other countries that offered a bit more temporal comforts than the biblical lands. But what about the other millions left behind in Russia? Would life now be eased? Perhaps their traditional faith could be protected in this new socialist culture. Yet all too soon, the door slammed shut with them left behind. They could no longer freely leave, and most of them remain there today. So, brethren, these are some examples of unbelief that prevented some from entering to the promised rest. Entering into the promised land of rest requires faith, promptness to act, and work here with sacrifices before enjoying the peaceful fruits of promise. And so I ask, how is it with us? Yes, we rest in faith from the troubles around us. But have we already arrived to the promised land with plenty of food on the table, clean air, clean clothes, many restitution conveniences in our hands, entertainment to soothe the mind or to stir our fantasies? Or is there yet labor for that which the five physical senses know little or nothing? What has God provided that eyes do not see, nor ears hear, for them that love him? And eyes shall see the king in his beauty. They shall behold the land that is far off. Isaiah 33, verse 17. What kind of eyes are these? What land is this? Who is the king? Paul says to the Romans, he writes in Romans 8, 24 and 25, "For we are saved by hope, but hope that is seen is not hope. For what a man seeth, why doth he yet hope for it? For if we hope for that we see not, then do we with patience wait for it? For what and how do we labor? Is our labor for earthly bread? For medical relief? For building a larger home? For collections of things that gather dust? For an academic degree? For a reputation that will be acclaimed in history books? Or for bequeathing a larger estate for the next generation?" Think about it, brother. For what are we laboring now? Isn't it for the future, not for present comforts? There is a labor for things that do not endure, but for only the present moment. They are called comfort foods, fantasy fairs, amusement parks, joy rides, sand castles to be seen of others, and financial security, all elusive bubbles. Isaiah asked the question in Isaiah 55, 2, "Wherefore do you spend money for that which is not bread, and your labor for that which satisfies not?" And Jesus said in John chapter 6, verse 27, "Labor not for the meat which perishes, but for the meat which endures unto everlasting life." Surely not all present pleasures are evil, but they are all for the here and the now, for the moment. People of the world labor for present comforts and are inevitably unfulfilled. Do we labor only for present comforts and relief? Not if we see the land that is far off in Hymn 322. "What poor despised company of travelers are these, who walk in yonder narrow way, beset by many foes? Why do they then appear so mean, and why so much despised? Because of their rich robes unseen, the world is not apprised. But why keep they that narrow road, that rugged, thorny maze? Ah, that's the way their leader trod. They love and keep his ways." Brethren, for this we labor with faith, not for present rest, although it has been promised sufficient for our needs, but we labor for the future land of peace and promise. Even then the work will continue, but it will not be tedious or laborious. Think of working without ever becoming exhausted, working with unlimited power and resources, of works that will dispel the darkness and bring life and restoration to a dying world. Now we are laboring with the consuming sacrifice on the altar. But then Apostle John heard a voice from heaven saying unto me, write, Blessed are the dead which die in the Lord from henceforth. Yea, saith the Spirit, that they may rest from their labors and their works to follow them. Revelation 14, 13. Now it has been said that the great work is mainly a work within for the new creature. For the manna of February 5, we read this. This is the will of God concerning you, even your sanctification. Coming to the scriptures to ascertain God's will, we will find that the great work which God asks for us, of us, is not a work for others, but work in ourselves, subduing, conquering, ruling self. Everything else, therefore, our service for the household of faith and our doing good unto all men by home and foreign missions and so forth is subservient to this most important work within. Well, end of quote. With this, one might say that God knows my heart, therefore I will spend each day in reading and meditation and just control my thoughts. Well, this is not the intent of the text nor Brother Russell's comment. The new creature work is largely developed when we use and work with a consecrated heart. Notice he says these external endeavors are subservient to the most important work within. In other words, we cannot depend on the outward work without inward work. But both are necessary. One is not sufficient alone. One is not sacrificed for the other. The outward work serves the primary work within. So labors are the result of a consecrated heart. James says, faith without works is dead. Yet it is still labor. We have troubles without and within. Paul writes in 2 Corinthians 7, verse 5, we are troubled on every side, without our fightings and within our fears. So we ask, how do the saints labor to enter upon the heavenly Canaan and the rest to follow? You know, brethren have given up lucrative but demanding jobs or taken an early retirement in order to give more time to studies, meetings, conventions, service, and the witness work. Some have moved from the frenzy of worldly cares to a more simple environment and demands in order to serve more directly. Some have given countless hours of weariness to reach others and support the harvest work. Then there are those who labor two by two, where a wife takes one part of the spiritual labor and the husband another. And together they trim earthly encumbrances in order to support each other and further the message of truth. There is a little history of Brother Olashinsky, who died in 1930 at 73 years of age. For 38 years of consecrated life, he labored to share the truth message. He traveled repeatedly to Poland to confirm the wheat in the harvest field, sometimes months or a larger part of a year away from home in Chicago. When the First World War broke out, he could not return for a year and a half. All the while, Sister Olashinsky maintained their home for him to return to Chicago to his rest and continue the translation work. Here are a few words about her, her service in the 1930 Reunion Convention report. And we read, "It is not amiss here to mention that during his prolonged absences from home, Sister Olashinsky was faithfully managing the home and nurturing their five children. The Olashinsky home had become a Polish Bethel, to which many of the friends would bring their troubles and misunderstandings. It was Sister Olashinsky's lot to comfort them while entertaining with whatever bounty her limited store could provide. Indeed, there were times when not even a crust could be found to feed sick souls. But somehow things always turned out right and always will while there is an ever-abiding faith in him who bade us seek first the kingdom of heaven and his righteousness, and all things needful will be added unto us." End of the quote from that little report. There are those who labor to bring rest for others, not for themselves. Their names are seldom sung in history books, but their names are in the divine book of life. There are those comforters in Zion who take the time to apply the medicine of hope and peace to troubled souls, or to share or lift some burdens of fainting sojourners in a narrow way. Yes, there are still Marys who anoint the feet of the Master with expensive oil of tears. Such services are not considered burdensome, but joyful labors. We remember, and maybe you remember too, the story of a young boy who rescued another boy caught in a snowstorm. He carried him through the bitter cold winter to a shelter. A passerby said, "He is too heavy. Let him walk himself." The young laborer replied, "He's not heavy. He's my brother. What is heavy for one is pleasure for another." Brethren, have you labored long and countless hours to help someone else? There are those that have labored long to copy, record, transcribe, translate, and preserve the truth message for another generation, so that it might not be left behind and lost afterward and forgotten after their own footsteps have passed and their voice is silent in the grave. There are those using their time and technical talents to transcribe the truth on the internet at no cost to the reader at all. But it has cost. It's had a cost for the scribe. When body and mind can no longer carry the load, the aged ones encourage and cheer the younger ones. Those who have the strength to carry forward the banner of the Spirit of Truth with the same purpose that the other generation did. Sharon likes to record tell a story about a young crippled boy that could not participate with his colleagues in the school recital on the stage. And he was so happy. And someone asked him, why are you so happy when you could be on the stage? The boy said, oh no, my job is to clap and cheer. Sometimes that's what we can do. That's part of our labor, to cheer those that can go on ahead of us. All these things and more constitute the labor, the energy, the diligence and persistence against foes within and without. It is carried on through good or evil report. Why do you endure in this labor? Has it brought you honor, acclaim, or profit in this life? No. According to Hebrews 4, verse 9, it is a rest that remains hereafter. According to verse 8, it is for another day. That day of rest follows when changing the sacrificial garments into glory garments. But notice, the rest from the labor ceases. But the work continues according to Revelation 14, verse 13. The work that follows will parallel the work this side the veil, and it is nicely summarized by the pastor in volume 3, page 235 and 236. He says, first, it is for the gathering and completing those remaining of the elect church. Secondly, for declaring unto Zion, natural and spiritual, thy God reigneth. And thirdly, declaring the tidings of the kingdom, both its judgments and good tidings. We labor with this now in this work. The labor will cease, but the work will continue. Then after removing the old world systems, then we'll continue another work of writing the new law covenant in the hearts of mankind. The law shall go forth from Zion, and the word of the Lord from Jerusalem. This law of giving this law-giving work will not just be writing new ordinances and rules. It will be organizing new programs for those returning from the grave. There will be work for educational programs, history lessons, healing of broken hearts, teaching how to purge fears and tears, terror and greed, vengeance and pride from human hearts. Oh yes, that work will continue to restore the earth to what was first offered and lost, and then returned from Eden. But this work will not be tiring. It will not be exhausting to restore the dying child to a mother's arms, and the lost parents to the orphans. There will be the work of comforting and reconciling the murderer and his victim. The exploiter and the exploited must be reconciled. That is your work. The tongue of the liar must confess the truth. Isaiah 35, verse 6. Then shall a lame man leap as a hart, and the tongue of the dumb sing. For in the wilderness shall waters break out, and streams in the desert. And brethren, that is the work for which we labor now, but which will be executed with total confidence and repose in the eternal purpose of the Almighty. Only when we have this vision before us are we enabled to endure now. Without the vision, we too would perish. Now the word labor, and you know this, it's been stated before, means something more than toil. It means to be diligent, persevere. It means earnest endeavor. Why must we persist and persevere? The reasons are various. It is normal for runners in a race to begin with great endeavor and vision for the goal. Oh, wonderful if it could be all concluded in a day, a week, or a year. But after 10 years, the way becomes routine. We are cumbered with additional responsibilities. Higher education takes our time and strength. And now a family deserves our attention. Rising cost requires additional business endeavors. It seems all I can do is to get to the meetings, and I'm not preparing as I once did or wished to do. And then comes 20, 30 years or more that pass. The challenges increase even more. My health and stamina are not what they used to be. Diversity among brethren are more troublesome than ever. Witness opportunities seem to be less and fewer. Fewer are willing to even listen or care about my message. So many things around me are deteriorating or breaking and need repair and replacing. The brethren, the meetings will have to wait until I get through this. Anyway, things I do or say are not much understood or appreciated. All of this brings to mind the question of persistence. And remembering where we began. Where did we begin? What was our first love? What moved us to consecration and to give up this earth? It was laboring for that which remains for the future. Where is the vision? Where is the mission, the great cause? For giving our all. How do we refresh the courage and the purpose where we began? Do we need to spend more time with the saints, the young and the old, to share the dream and the hope? Can I prepare at least one comment for each study or testimony meeting? Can I put at least one tract or speak the word every time I go from my house? Can I comfort those who mourn and rejoice with those who rejoice, as well as offer our participation in the work that brings their joy? And what about the sick and the dying that we have walked some way with? What about the days and the hours to sit with them? To remind them of the hope, to read the scriptures and read some of those promises that Brother Larry read to us. Somehow we must shake ourselves, wake ourselves, draw our armor on more firmly, find and face the opportunities to use this little life. It is so short. Looking back, it will all seem too short. What did we do with it for these years? This means to labor with resolve, determination, endeavor. Else it will slip from us. It will be taken by the cares of this life. Of course, this is with the rest of faith that we remain during this life, but more so with the eye to the rest that remains for those who persevere unto the end. 1 Corinthians 15:58. Therefore, my beloved brothers, be steadfast, immovable, always abounding in the work of the Lord, knowing that in the Lord, your labor is not in vain. Labor for that which will be. We labor now for that which shall be. Yes, we are at peace, content, knowing that it will come. And so what matters it if we are not understood or appreciated now? What matters it whether others will hear or forbear with our message? What matters it if we receive criticism or rebuke? What matters it if we are exhausted at the end of a day? Labors that change the course of history and touch the lives of mankind were largely unappreciated, misunderstood, or just ignored in their lifetime. Here are a few examples. Arius, that early courageous Christian, he was excommunicated by Trinitarians for his faith in the singularity of the Father and the first creation, his Son, the Logos. He retreated from public eye to teach the poor and the humble. Wycliffe denounced the authority of the clergy to interpret scripture and labored long and hard to translate the Bible from the Latin Vulgate into Middle English. His works were burned and all seemed to be lost, but his example became the foundation for others to carry the torch, such as Tyndale, Luther, Coverdale, until the Bible was carried into every language on earth. And then there was that man, Gutenberg. He died in debt and in poverty. But his press brought the printed word to a hungry world after he died. Newton and Einstein were credited with math and science. But when their labor turned to understand the Bible and the Creator, they were considered eccentric and senile. Theodor Herzl pursued his dream of a Jewish state, but never lived to see it. Then there was Eliezer Ben Yehuda. Maybe you've read about him. He labored night and day to invent a modern Hebrew language for his people in the homeland. His countrymen thought him crazy who wanted to keep their original tongues. He died in 1922, just after entering a last word into his new dictionary That last word was nephesh, meaning life. After defining this, he breathed his last, and his wife found him in the morning with the candle burning still, slumped over the dictionary. Only afterward did the Hebrew people realize his work was necessary for the nation. So, brethren, when will we see the peaceable fruits of our labors? Romans 8:25. If we hope for that we see not, then do we with patience wait for it? Do we not only wait? Do we also labor for it? 1 Corinthians 15:58. Therefore, my beloved brethren, be ye steadfast, unmovable, always abounding in the work of the Lord, for as much as ye know that your labor is not in vain in the Lord. So, you now rest in faith that your work will eventually have its fruit. We labor to enter into that greater rest when those fruits will bear their greater 12 manner of fruits, month by month, besides the river of life. Revelation 22, verse 2. All our experiences are part of the present labor. Hebrews 12:11. Now no chastening for the present seemeth to be joyous, but grievous. Nevertheless, afterward it yields the peaceable fruit of righteousness unto them which are exercised thereby. Wherefore lift up the hands which hang down, and the feeble knees, and make straight paths for your feet, lest that which is lame be turned out of the way. Oh yes, hymn number 258. I would love thee more and more, till this fleeting, fleeting life is o'er, till my soul has gained the bliss of a higher, higher state than this. Then I'll see what thou hast wrought. Then I'll love thee as I ought. Looking back, I'll praise the way thou hast led me day by day. Amen.